Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Would You Date a Scientist? I am joined this week by Natalia Kupanu. Hello, Natalia. How are you?
Hello, Wendy. I'm very well, thank you. And you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks. Sun shining. Sitting in my sunroom today rather than in my office with Paul Rudd. Yeah, I need to get this sun into my skin. Come on. So you're working at Tide, Natalia. I mean, before I get into that, I'm going to ask you for the second time, like, actually, how are you doing? Because it's pretty rough. The world's been a bit recently.
I mean, with so many things going on around the world, I feel we should try to be more grateful as well. So I guess it's the start of the quarter at work, so I'm very grateful that we have a lot of things, a lot of interesting things to do. Easter holidays are coming up as well, so I'm hoping to get some more sunshine during that time and see my family. So, yeah.
That'll be nice. Oh, nice four-day weekend.
What about you?
I'm actually really, really good. I mean, not to go into too much personal detail, but dating's brilliant, actually. I was hating it, but it's actually okay. I've got big smiles on my face. So what's your favourite piece of tech ever?
I think, well, obviously, for the last 12, 15 years, I don't think I have spent a single day without using either my phone or my laptop.
Yeah.
But I think probably my latest favorite piece of tech is the robot vacuum cleaner.
Yes. Yeah.
So during lockdown, I think everyone... they got themselves a pet and I got myself a robot vacuum cleaner, which is kind of like a dog or a cat that moves around the house. But it's also quite different at the same time. But I do recommend it to anyone who got themselves a pet because it's perfect for pet hair.
Yeah, because you can put your pet on it like a shark. my friends Rosie and Robin, they had one and they named it. What have you named yours?
Just Robin.
Rob? Oh, that's weird. Perfect. So you're working at Tide, Natalia. You've been there for two and a quarter years, senior lead data scientist, and you're a manager as well. Can you were at Zoopla before that? Might have some friends in common from there. Can you talk me through your career and then talk a little bit about what you're doing at Tide?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, like I've worked in multiple industries. I've worked in e-commerce, prop tech at Zoopla, and now fintech at Tide. I've always been in data departments. I've done a little bit of business intelligence, data analytics, some data engineering, but my main focus is data science. I guess my role at Tide, for anyone who doesn't know, Tide provides business services for SMEs and sole traders, I believe.
Including myself, love it. Great customer service. Never had a problem. Love Tide. Thank you.
Very, very happy to hear that. My role at Tide is very unique and interesting at the same time. Obviously, when I joined, we were more like a startup. Now we're a scale-up. Our data department grew massively, and I think my responsibilities also grew as well during this sort of journey. So initially, when I joined, I think we were 3 or 4 people, and now we're 45 or so.
Wow, great growth.
Yeah, it is really amazing. We have now established teams for business intelligence, data engineering, and data science. So it's really, really nice. Yeah, and I guess as part of my role, I'm wearing different hats as well, like being hands-on, also working with the data strategy, and helping. Helping the function to grow and deliver value, so it's very, very interesting.
Brilliant. What kind of size team are you managing?
I have, I'm working basically in a specific business area. For credit. We are 6 people there. It's a cross-functional team with data engineers, data analysts, and data scientists. But I've also had direct reports in other business areas too, but we weren't necessarily working together for the same business project.
Got you. That's brilliant. So how did you get into data science in the first place?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So I studied engineering at Cambridge, which offers a quite interesting course. So in the first 2 years, you study every discipline of engineering, from aeronautical and structural to electrical and information engineering. It's really, really interesting. But then in the last 2 years of the course, you can customize it. So I had a very... I had a weird combo, I guess, of courses from civil engineering and information engineering. So a few of my modules were related to machine learning and computer vision. But at the time, I had in my head that I will work as a civil engineer. And I remember I did a summer internship in New York while I was a student. And I was in a civil engineering consulting firm. And they had an R&D department, and they were doing a machine learning project there. So they were taking some measurements from the ground, and they were predicting the soil movements. And I think that was the first time I thought I want to try machine learning and data science as a profession. So after I graduated, I decided I wanted to work in a tech company and not go through the classic software engineering path. So I thought data analysis and data science was something that suited more my profile at the time. So I joined a startup where my supervisor, Marcus Nelson, if he hears, I say hi to him. I was there with my supervisor, and the two of us did anything related to data, from like BI, data analysis, data engineering, data science. And from all of these, I found that data science was a type of work that I enjoy the most. So I focused on that, and here I am now.
Brilliant. It sounds like a really good way of a really good path that you've led, just following what you love doing. I love that. So what piece of advice would you give to somebody who's just starting? Like, so for those who haven't listened before, this podcast is for people who want to get into data science under any of the guises. You know, it could be data engineering, or, you know, because that's data science used to be all of it, didn't it? It's just separating out now. So if it's people who are either looking to pivot from their career into data science, or people who are going through academia and looking for tips or tricks on how to get their first project, first working project, or first role. Have you got any tips for those people?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I actually blogged about it in Medium, because I think I was struggling initially as well.
Okay.
In terms of what exactly I need to do. So so people can go can find me on Medium and read more details there. But
we'll put that in the show notes of your blog if you want to. Let us know what it is.
Yeah, sure. So data science has three pillars: kind of the software engineering piece, the maths and statistics side, and then domain expertise. And depending on your background, you might need to focus on one of those pillars more. And hence, like, if, for example, you're missing that statistical background, then you need to read certain books and or do certain courses on that. If you're coming from a mathematical background, maybe you need to work on your software engineering skills. I think in that case, you need to do more practical coding, basically projects.
Sure. So making sure, so if you're talented in one of them, making sure that you've done the learning for the other two to make sure that you're good at all three of them. Yeah.
But for all the people, really, like the key advice is to get your hands dirty and really find either a project or like a cargo competition or like just like do your own projects as well if you can find anything else in your current work that can help you build those skills.
Brilliant. So thinking back and looking at your career, you've actually have pivoted, haven't you? You've pivoted into data science. I know it's quite a smooth transition from where you were. What would help somebody if you say you're hiring for a position in your team? What would you look for specifically in somebody if they had, is there anything extra that somebody can do that really make them stand out to you?
So I think talent and motivation to grow are two things that are quite important. I think if you're a person that is pivoting their career into data science. So for example, I know you like asking other people like whether someone needs to have like a master's degree data science. And I don't think it's a necessity. Like I've hired people that didn't have a master's and I'm really, really proud of them on how well they are doing. And I guess in their cases, like they still had like a strong academic background, but they also contributed in open source projects. And of course, we also give people the chance to show how they work with like a home test challenge as well. So I think your work can speak for itself sometimes. Those things are, I think, they kind of help.
Perfect. Thanks for answering that question. What's going to be coming up? Brilliant. So it would be, just repeating what you said, open source, get some open source, something about a project that you're passionate about. Do the work on that, do the project and pop it on something like GitHub so that you can present that to somebody.
That always helps.
Yeah, brilliant. So what's the worst piece of advice you've ever received? I usually ask what's the best piece of advice, but I think that's quite often the same. What's the worst piece of advice so people can dodge it?
That's a difficult one.
You don't have to tell me who gave it.
I guess people who have like an old way of thinking might say that it's important to stay in a company for many, many years. Because this is what it was happening in the past. People are staying in a company for 10, 20, 30 years. And don't get me wrong, that's absolutely fine. But if you are feeling unhappy or you want to try something else and you didn't manage to find like a way to do that in your current company, it is not a bad thing to move to a different organization. I think some people have the fear that I might look really bad in their CV, but I don't think that nowadays hiring managers think that someone that has worked in multiple organizations will not perform well in that job.
Yeah.
You know, there is great resignation happening.
Yes, there is.
A new phenomenon as well, especially in the US and the UK. So it's definitely something that happens. So you cannot penalize people for that.
Absolutely. I think it's really important to have a chat about this. So thank you very much for bringing it up. When I used to work in actuarial, if somebody had been in a role or if they weren't a contractor, if somebody had been in a permanent position and moved around before 2 years even, then it was like, don't even bother looking at them. What? So these days, it's really refreshing working with hiring managers such as yourself. And I do... there's going to be some people who just are rubbish and they hop jobs. That, yes, there is going to be that. But a lot of the time it is because somebody's as grown as far as they can in a position, a position might not have been what they were introduced to. You know, that's not what they were hired for. The company could be doing a lot more to help somebody stay in a position. We need to think about all of these things when we're hiring. And absolutely, if somebody's not getting everything they want, or it's time for them to move on, or they want to work on a different project, or something else sparks their excitement, absolutely go and do it. But don't stay somewhere miserable and be miserable. It's just not going to work. Be happy, allow people to move, and hire people based on their skills, not based on the length of time they've been somewhere or the amount of time that they've not worked, you know, if there's a gap in their CV. Yeah, we need to stop doing that. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Really appreciate that. So what's the most interesting part of data science for you? Seeing as you've worked in different sectors, this is kind of a two-part question, I guess. How different is it for you as a data scientist to work in those different sectors, or is it a blanket data's data? And then I forgot the other part of the question, so if you want to ask, answer that one first.
Okay. Yeah, I think the second one was what was the most interesting part as well.
There you but go. Like, thanks.
Yeah. For answering your the first part of your question around how different it is, I think some industries are moving faster than others, and they are more dynamic. For example, fintech is a fast pace industry with high growth demands. At the same time, a lot of companies that might belong in different industries have similar business problems. For example, increasing acquisition of customers, increasing engagement, conversion, revenue. So that means that the tactics and the model techniques and the type of data can be similar, because the mathematics behind them are similar as well. What's different is the definition of inputs and outputs, because they vary by industry and by problem as well. So you can see, for example, CVs of data scientists that came from multiple industries, but they will still have a similar portfolio of projects, for example, trend prediction, customer segmentation, lifetime value estimation, like a classification of an imbalanced data set, and so on. So yeah, in a way, I see similarities between industries.
Yeah.
But of course, I'm not underestimating the domain knowledge that is also needed, so that you can translate the business problem into a machine learning problem. Now, what I think it's the most interesting part of data science, I think for me, is kind of the scale and the impact. So, like, taking a step back, I guess I'll tell you first why I became an engineer. So I like maths, I like physics, but I chose to study engineering because I like seeing maths applied in real world problems. And initially, statistics was the first thing that attracted me to data science. But the most interesting part is the impact. So you try to optimize something such that it takes better decisions, and you automate it and you scale it, so you can have a really big impact. And I find that quite exciting.
Satisfying.
But obviously, yeah, you need to be cautious as well, because you don't want to reinforce biases and on all these sort of things.
Leading straight into the next question. Very well done. it's like you're a pro. How do we stop bias in data science, in machine learning, in data? How do we do it? How can we do it? Can we do it at all?
It's a very difficult problem, if I'm honest. There are several ways, though. There are several sampling techniques, because we need to address the heavy imbalance of the different groups in our data set. Someone could say that, okay, we can remove sensitive data and this will help. But unfortunately, even if we do that, it is not surprising that sensitive or biased data correlate with the other type of data that you might include in your model. Mm-hmm. By still using the remaining of your data, you might be able to still predict gender or race. There is like a technique called an algorithm called adversarial neural network, and essentially what you try to do there is you train your model in a way such that it removes the gender or the age or the age or the race information from your data, while at the same time it tries to find the right answer. So maybe I'm getting too technical into this.
No, this is good.
Essentially, you remove any, you try to remove any race or sex related information from the share from your data, and you try to debias it, but this has an effect as well on the model accuracy, because you mitigate biases, but at the same time the right answer is the biased answer.
Sure. So I guess you haven't got the bigger picture, you haven't got the full picture. Yeah.
So yeah, there is this trade-off between accuracy and fairness, and I think mm-hmm. like business in such cases shall take a clear decision on that too.
Okay, what is your talking about diversity and race and gender and age, and what is it like for you as a woman in data science? How have you seen diversity throughout your career?
So obviously, I think tech is a male-dominated industry. But at the same time, I don't think that anything or anyone can stop me from pursuing a career in tech, right? I guess as an advice for other people coming from minority groups in their industry, it's kind of important, especially at the start of your career, to surround yourself with people that can be supportive and don't have biases, and can also guide you on how to handle difficult situations like negotiating a salary or discussing career progression. So it's very critical, I think, at the beginning. But then once you feel quite confident, it's your time then to help others.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that I do within my career coaching is talk, and I posted about it on LinkedIn this morning, actually. Like, how do you get paid what you're worth? How do you know what you're getting paid? Because a lot of the time in any role, and I've done it myself, you start working somewhere for a salary and you do a really, really good job. So they give you more responsibility and then you don't get a pay rise for it. And then you wait for that promotion and, you know, it just doesn't happen. I'm not saying this happens all the time, but it certainly happened to me. That's just one of the ways that you can not end up not getting the salary that you deserve. What's it like hiring for Tide? Have you seen even amount of diversity through hiring? Is it difficult to find anybody specific?
It is difficult for sure. a lot of companies want data scientists as well, so it's quite competitive. But we don't see many many females applying as well, which is not great. But we do have women in the data department, so I'm quite happy about that. But surely the ratio is not equal. It's not 50-50 in the in the applications.
I'd be quite interested to see what the ratio is compared to other work in tech. I'm going to see if I can find that information. I'll be interested to see that because, you know, from what I've spoken to, it's quite good within data science. There's definitely a lack, but I think it's going to be better than, you know, other roles. It's like engineering as well. It's definitely lacking.
An improvement.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I think it's giving those minority groups the confidence, the safety, and the support to apply for those positions and go through the process. Because, you know, the hiring process is very archaic, and it's not everybody knows how to do it. You know, I am a white cis het female, and, you know, I was born and bred here, and I know how to do my CV, how to interview, what to prepare for, etc. If somebody's come over from another country, for example, they're not going to necessarily know what a CV should look like, how the interview process is, and they're going to be potentially penalised for that. And, you know, it's through no fault of their own. So, yeah, interesting topic to talk about. You guys know by now that I love to talk about this stuff. So what do you... Right. It's this question that I can never... I've been saying that I think we're going to be like episode 40. I still can't ask this question well. So, right, we've got billionaires in the world. Okay, mm-hmm. Stay with me. Do you think that they could build an evil supervillain to take over the world? If they do, or if they can, how are we going to stop them? And what should their punishment be?
Oh my God, I really don't want to make our listeners more anxious.
Please do. No, some of the answers on these are a bit like, it goes from that's not going to happen to it's already happening and this is happening. But please do.
Okay. What was the first, if it's possible first?
Yeah.
To take over the world with... For robots to take over the world because of...
Yeah, I mean, you've just interpreted it as robots, so let's go with robots. I just said villain. Yeah, it's just a villain. But yeah, go for robots. Could it happen?
I'm not sure if it will happen. I want to be hopeful that, you know, something will stop them before that. Yeah, I really hope this doesn't happen. I guess what we can do about that, I mean, we do see like some big companies that have a monopoly, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess it's a responsibility of the different governments to guardrails in place so that we don't so that such thing doesn't happen.
Yeah. Simply. Thinking about it, like, I mean, Elon Musk is doing this brain chip thing that's killed all of the chimps that he put it in, right? So that's should there be a worldwide, like we've got NATO that looks after Europe and certain countries, should there be a worldwide AI law that everybody has to adhere to?
You definitely need some regulations to kind of make sure that there's no harm to humanity in the long run, for sure. But unfortunately, like, technology is evolving so fast, and maybe not enough attention is paid into this sort of like topic from the relevant parties.
Yeah.
Ethical AI, green AI are topics that are becoming more trendy now, but like obviously we are still quite behind with all of these things.
Yeah. So I've read some the guidelines that our government put out, and they're so wishy-washy. Like, anybody that did anything could definitely say, like, loophole that and say, well, I didn't do anything wrong, you know. So, yeah. So before we go then, Natalia, have you got anything that you'd like to plug or talk about? You can talk about your blog if you want, or anything else in the whole world.
In the whole world.
In the whole wide world.
I want to close with a more positive.
Yes.
I love Matrix, the film.
Do you? Yeah.
But you can still do a lot of good with AI and machine learning. 100%. Like, you can see that you can solve problems much faster, essentially with those type of techniques. So if it is put in the right hands and you have the right intentions as well, you can definitely have a positive impact to the world. And I do want to believe that my team and I are trying to do that too.
Yep, I love that. I love that. I really, really do. Thank you so much. So look, I am just going to jump in here quickly and say that, you know, you mentioned the Matrix. If you have a look at my LinkedIn, I've just rebranded my career coaching, and Danny Townley, who's an absolute legend on LinkedIn, he runs Social Revamp. He's done my banner for me as Trinity from the Matrix. So go and have a look at that. It's hilarious. So all of my posts now are like Matrix related, and I'm here for it. I absolutely love it. So yeah, if anybody needs anything, any banners on LinkedIn, go see Danny Townley. He also helps with like frameworks for helping with your business. So yeah, little plug from me because he's so amazing. Okay, so Natalia, thank you so much for coming on. I've really liked talking to you. And yeah, thank you very much.
I really enjoyed it too. Thank you for inviting me.
Good. And well done for your first time.
Thank you. Yeah, and obviously, if anyone is wants to reach out to me, they can do that over LinkedIn, and I can we can discuss about their data science career as well there.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Wendy.